For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning. Nice to see everybody. Nice to see so many new faces. Nice to see so many familiar faces joining us in the chat. I say good morning to my colleagues, Dave Minuk. I say good morning to my colleague, Ezra Ginsberg. Nice to see both of you gentlemen. Ezzy, just as an update, as a follow-up to last night's riveting post-game show story, you managed to get stuck in your back lane again.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. It's only been a few hours since we were on breaking down the Jets-Bruins game. But yeah, all I have to say is, thank you to Dave and Sylvia, because if it wasn't for them, I would still be stuck in my back lane in River Heights. It's unbelievable. Like, my car is now going to be parked in the front until the city plows the back lanes. But yesterday I had the chipper out. I had a small shovel, a big shovel. I was shoveling out like snow and water and ice and everything like that. So I think, you know, being stuck behind your own garage twice in the span of 5 hours or something like that is enough to make me avoid the back lanes. But yeah, there were some curse words happening last night by myself. Well, I'm sitting there at 11:15 at night. First off, after I dropped off Dave, I went to McDonald's and got a couple Junior McChickens and a McFlurry. So I was all excited. So not only did I get stuck, but I've got the smell of those delicious Junior McChickens and I've got my McFlurry. So what I originally did was I went inside and I was on hold with CAA, but Dave Minuk is better than CAA. So thanks again, Dave, for helping me, Dave and Sylvia, for helping me get my car out.
I love that you went and got two Junior McChicken and a McFlurry at 11:30.
Well, Naomi wasn't home, so there was no food. I mean, there was food in the fridge, but I don't know what to do with it.
You know, you didn't need to eat something. Most people...
Drew, you do remember the last time as he tried to make food, he like warmed up like... pierogies in a frying pan. Yeah,
I still don't know if tin foil can go in the microwave. Like, I haven't figured that out yet. I know that like saran wrap is okay, but tin foil I don't think is good, right, guys?
I don't think saran wrap's okay either. It's plastic. It'll melt.
No, saran wrap's fine.
No, saran wrap you can have in the microwave.
Yeah.
Can you?
Pretty sure. I mean, I don't use a microwave because I don't like
it. I mean, you probably shouldn't, but I do.
I wouldn't put saran wrap in a microwave. I mean,
I don't use a
microwave. How do you cover your food then, Drew? You got, I guess, lids, but I mean, if you don't have a lid, you got to use something.
Well, why do you need to cover your food in the microwave?
Because it can explode. It can go everywhere. Like, if you're putting like sauce or something in there, you got to cover that up.
People are a little worried about your ability to pass home ec.
Is this the earliest into a show Drew's had an anxiety attack? That's what I want to know.
It might be. I mean, anyways, let's get into it. I mean, the Jets obviously lost a game last night against Boston that was there for the taking. That was there for the taking after they really only played, you know, a good 10 minutes in the entirety of the game. So it's a bad loss for the team. It's not a great effort from the team in general. They get some good news on the out-of-town scoreboard in that the Florida Panthers, despite losing Aaron Ekblad early in the game, they defeat the Anaheim Ducks. So the Ducks are still behind the Jets in the standings. And that's the silver lining, I guess.
Jets have two games in hand on the Ducks, too. So the Ducks are, right, they're out of it.
I would say the Ducks are, yeah. I mean, now the Jets are obviously focused on the Dallases, and they obviously have to get over Vancouver. And the, you know, that's all, that's why, you know, last night's defeat, part of the reason why last night's defeat is so disheartening for the Jets is they had that opportunity to leapfrog Vancouver to be a point behind the Dallas Stars. The Stars obviously still have those three games in hand on the Jets, and then the Vegas Golden Knights ahead of them as well. So, I mean, the race is still there for the second wild card spot, but a disappointing loss from the Winnipeg Jets last night against the Boston Bruins. And now you have the one game between now and Monday's trade deadline. And I don't think that game should be the tipping point, or the result of Sunday's game should be the tipping point, whether or not the Jets are active on the trade market. But, you know, who knows with this team, if they're truly, this organization is truly evaluating where they are compared to the other better, best teams in the Western Conference and throughout the NHL, gentlemen.
Drew, you're 100% right when you say the result of Sunday's game should have no bearing on what you're going to do at the trade deadline. Like, if that's the case, then there are some major issues. I don't believe that at all. At this point, you know what your team is. You know what you're facing. It's still an uphill battle. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, disappointing game last night. And not only was the second period, you know, disappointing, but just the overall result and the opportunity that you had to pull closer to Dallas and Vegas, right? And I mentioned this yesterday, boys, on the postgame show. Like, I think Dallas is ultimately going to be the team that takes advantage of or gets the wild card spot, the second wild card spot. And it's partly due to the games in hand, but I just think, you know, of Dallas, Vegas, and Winnipeg right now, Dallas has it together the most and is playing the best hockey, right? So it's a missed opportunity because now you're 4 points back of Vegas. And I think Vegas has played one more game, if I'm not mistaken, but we talked about, you know, Dallas, you're 3 points behind Dallas right now. And, you know, you have three games, you know, they have three games in hand. So it's going to be really tough at this point. And yeah, you wonder, like, was that Andrew Kopp's last game? You mentioned it, you know, yesterday on the postgame show. And, like, Kopp obviously, you know, is coming off of a bit of a concussion scare there, right? But, you know.
Ultimately not diagnosed with a concussion, obviously.
Right. And that's why I said scare.
Yeah, which surprised me, to be perfectly honest, because I thought, I mean, it had all the earmarks of what looks like a concussion. But that's why you never want to play doctor on YouTube, or you never want to say anything with any certainties. But, you know, people were saying, and I didn't see it, that, you know, that Dominic Toninato gave Andrew Kopp a big hug at the end of the game last night, Dave, which to me is, you know, basically almost your thank you. It's been a pleasure, you know, playing with you for the last however number of years they would have been together. I guess 2 years for those two guys. But if that was how it went out, that certainly would be. That to me is emblematic that the Jets know that regardless of what happens in terms of results between now and Monday, Andrew Kopp has likely played his last game for the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, if you think the Jets will go into the asset management position and not play him on Sunday, that's a possibility. I mean, I'm not certain that they will, but we shall see. Or Paul Stastny, will they hold them both out? And it's interesting because, as folks may know, their Jets were scheduled to practice today at 12. They're instead going to they've canceled
the day off,
so we won't have any insight tomorrow. However, the Moose, of course, play tonight in Iowa, which is of course a hop, skip, and jump from Chicago, so wouldn't be a problem. We'll most likely see you know, all the players who were scheduled to play for the Moose playing, but maybe we'll gain some insight if, you know, a David Gustafson isn't in the lineup, or if Austin Bogansky isn't in the lineup, then maybe you'll have a little more insight as to what's happening. So stay tuned. This is an early Moose Minute, but stay tuned for 6 p.m. puck drop between the Iowa Wild and the Manitoba Moose in Des Moines. So that might give you some insight as to what the Jets are planning for tomorrow. It's also entirely possible that we don't get any insight. They play those guys, and, you know, because they have a glut of guys they could call up, Jeff Mellott as well, Mike Yesimont, there's a lot of guys that, you know, could be recalled from the Moose in terms of forwards. I mean, obviously defensemen, we know who those guys are. You know, there's a lot of options, so they don't necessarily have to do it. And like I said, because I was right there, they don't necessarily need to do it today because of how close they are till tomorrow. So we'll see what happens in that regard. But I don't know. I mean, the Jets really haven't done that. I can't really recall them holding out any players in advance of the trade deadline. Now, this one's a little bit more impactful, because, you know, you really can't afford, if you're thinking about Paul Stastny, if you're thinking about Andrew Kopp, then, and maybe the team knows. I mean, maybe that is a sign. I didn't see it. I didn't notice it. So, I mean, mm-hmm. if it happened, maybe it was a bit of a, as they say in poker, a tell. And maybe the players had some sort of inkling as to what was going on. But, yeah, I mean.
Well, also, too, it could have just been him hugging Kopp because they're buddies. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean that that was a farewell hug. I didn't see it either. But, I mean, like, let's not, you know, like, we're not TMZ here. Like, let's not, like, make something out of nothing. Like, it could have meant that they.
What do you mean, we actually pushed Scott Billick from the next segment. Were you actually having a body language expert? Come on, analyze the video of what they saw. So when you saw Dominic Toninato hug Andrew Kopp, what did it mean to you? What does it tell us?
But you know what I mean, Dave? Like, these guys know that there's a good chance that that Kopp is traded. It's not like these guys are oblivious to that, right? Same thing goes for Paul Stastny. So it's possible. A few people sent that to us. We didn't see it on the broadcast, at least. Dave and I didn't. I'm not sure, Drew, if you caught it. But
I didn't see it either. No, we were doing post-game at that point, I think, so we missed it.
And then, but, and, you I know, mean, look, at if you are keeping Kopp, then you have to sign him. Because if I was telling this to Dave right before we started the show, I mean, you're just leaving free draft picks out there for Kopp. Because if Brandon Hagel gets, you know, a 2023 first rounder, a 2024 first rounder, plus two prospects, mm-hmm. I mean, you got to think you could probably get something similar for Kopp, no?
Well, that's the part that I haven't understood. Everyone's been saying Andrew Kopp, you know, second round pick, or, you know, there's maybe a second and a third.
The only thing with Hagel, though, is he signed very team, you know.
Yeah, he's got term.
$1.5 million for 2 more years. So that's the reason why he was able to garner what he
did. The return he did. Absolutely.
You're right. I don't think you're going to get the same, but I think you could probably get one first rounder.
I do too. If you look at what Cali Yarncroc went for, I mean, Cali Yarncroc goes from Seattle to Calgary. And he goes for a second, a third, and a seventh. Now, he goes for the seventh because Seattle agreed to retain some salary there. But a second and a third for Cali Yarncroc, well, I would say Andrew Kopp is the equal of, if not better, and probably better than Cali Yarncroc. So I don't know why that is.
Similar players, like those are kind of like middle six forwards, both good defensive forwards, versatile, can play on different lines. Yeah. So, I mean, you're probably looking at. If you're not getting, you're not going to get two first round picks, I don't think. But you could easily get maybe a first rounder and a third rounder, something
especially considering a first rounder from a top echelon team is essentially a high second rounder.
Right.
So, well, look at what Nick Foligno went for last year. I mean,
too much.
You know, well, obviously, way too Foligno's much.
Nick Foligno is a great player. So is Marcus Foligno. But I mean, that was not a good move by the Leafs.
No, it was not a good move, but look what it cost them. I mean, they didn't know at the time that it was going to blow up in the manner that it did, in the hilarious manner that it did. But, you know, if that's what – I mean, there's no reason why the Jets should be settling for – I mean, I think this starting asking should be a first right now. There's no reason on Saturday – the deadline is until Monday, but there's no reason to lower your price on Saturday. Especially with a guy like Yarncroc already out of the market, a guy like Hagel out of the market, that means there's less of a pool for those who are buyers to dip into. I mean, Claude Giroux is going to go for what Claude Giroux goes for, but Claude Giroux and Andrew Kopp are not what I would describe as the same player. They're not going to fetch the same return by any stretch of the imagination.
Claude Giroux had 100 points a couple of years ago. I mean, Claude Giroux is a top 20 forward in the league.
Right. I mean, exactly. Claude Giroux is going to go for a boatload. Andrew Kopp's not going to go for that, but he's going to be a strong consolation prize for anybody who maybe doesn't want to meet the Claude Giroux asking price or maybe even misses out on the Claude Giroux sweepstakes. There's no incentive for the Jets for Kevin Cheveldayoff right now to drop the price that he's asking for Andrew Kopp.
No,
and, you know, you
and he won't. I don't think he will, Drew. I agree 100% with everything that you said. And I mean, also look at what the Florida Panthers got for Ben Chiarot. And I realized, right, Chiarot's a defenseman. What Montreal got for Ben Chiarot, right? And another guy whose name is out there, I mentioned him yesterday on the post game show, who's a really good player. I think he's got 10 or 11 goals this year. I think his career high is like 16, 17, is Arturi Lehkonen. Like, those are the types of players, guys. Like, there's a few big-name defensemen out there. Everybody knows the big name out there is Jacob Chychrun, right? Like, you've heard a few teams, like St. Louis has been rumored to be in on Chychrun. I think we talked to Jeremy Rutherford last week. He thought Ben Chiarot was a better fit in St. Louis. If I was St. Louis, I wouldn't be going after Chychrun, but luckily I'm not an NHL general manager. But, like, this is what we're talking about. Middle six forwards, right? Yarncroc, Brandon Hagel. Like, Hagel's a guy, I mean – this isn't a guy that is going to play on the top line for the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, they're still trying to recreate that third line of Coleman, Goodrow, and Yanni Gourde, right? So Hagel can play in your top six, but on a stacked Lightning team, when they're healthy, I mean, he's probably a third line guy. And that's not taking anything away from him because he's going to get an opportunity to compete for a Stanley Cup. But
it
like,
just speaks about how good Tampa Bay is.
Well, it speaks and what they're willing to give up. And Dave is 100% right. I mean, even though they lottery protected those picks, which is funny because they're the defending two-time Stanley Cup champions, but you don't know where you're going to be in 2024, right? So that's why they did it.
To that point, Ezzy, I thought that that was a big mistake by Chicago. I thought, who's the GM? Brandon Davidson? Is he their new? Mm-hmm. He's got the full-time job. I thought he got played there by agreeing.
Kyle Davidson?
Maybe Kyle Davidson. Yeah, that's right. Sorry. I thought he got played there by agreeing to lottery protect those two first-round picks. So you're like, why? What's your incentive for doing that? Is Tampa Bay not going to make the trade regardless? I think they are. At least one of those two first-round picks should have been unprotected. Yeah. I thought Julian.
No, it's a fair point, Drew. I was just going to say, like, there's a good chance that it's not going to be a lottery pick, but you never know. And that's what you're saying is that now you've basically, you know, you've handcuffed yourself.
Yeah, your right? best case scenario is that it's, you know, the 11th overall pick.
Right.
You know, whereas if, you know, you, like you said, you never know 2 years from now, you know, maybe Stamkos retires, maybe, you know, who knows what happens with any of these guys. You know, you can fall off a cliff, especially when you've been playing as many games as the Tampa Bay Lightning have over the years. And all of a sudden, what could be a huge windfall is lottery protected for some reason. I thought that was a mistake by the Blackhawks general manager. That's a bit of a digression, of course. Let me ask you guys this. I'm not certain that Paul Stastny gets traded between now and Monday. I think it's possible the Jets re-sign him again on a one-year contract similar to what he's currently making. Are you guys...
It's possible.
I mean, yeah, what percentage odds would you place on Paul Stastny getting traded before Monday's deadline?
I mean, it's obviously here. I'll let Dave get in here because I've been talking too much. I would say that, you know, it's probably 50-50. Like, it's tough to say because Stastny at, what is he, 35 years old, 36 years old? We know how well-liked he is in the room. We know what type of player. I mean, everybody, all Jets fans know exactly what Stastny brings. He's having a good year playing with Scheifele and Wheeler. And we could argue, you know, what line he would be better suited on. You know, is he better suited on this team to be a center or a wing? I still think he's better suited at this point in his career to be on the wing. But, yeah, I think it's a possibility, Drew. And you know that, especially if you trade Kopp and then you have that available money, I mean, what's Stastny going to make, you know, $3 million or $4
million? Similar contract to, I think, what like he's currently making, yeah, Dave, so right?
I think that the odd, I would say 50-50 right now, whereas, you know, Andrew Kopp, it looks like it's probably closer to 100% that he's going to be traded.
Dave?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting scenario for the Jets. I mean, what are you keeping him for? Are you keeping him for this quasi run? Are you going to make it look like you don't want to sell the farm? I mean, all indications are from the articles that have been written that, I mean, I remember, I think Murat's written for both about both Stastny and Kopp and said the likelihood of either re-signing in Winnipeg is very low. Well, if that's the case, and if you're the Jets general manager, and if you found out that that's the answer, then there's no question what you have to do. You have to sell them both because you look, we talk about, you know, what, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff has said this in the past, not verbatim, but you had to reward this team for what they've done. Well, what have they done to earn a reward this year and to maintain, to retain these guys? They haven't done anything, right? You're not in the playoff spot. The percentage of you making the playoffs is what, like 10%, 13%? So it's very low. I'm not saying you couldn't, but you haven't been able to run together and you're healthy. It's not like you're missing Cole Perfetti right now. Christian Reichel, and I like Christian Reichel, but you can't pin your season on Christian Reichel. You've got a healthy group, and you are where you are right now. And you haven't been able to put, like, if you would have won last night and then you could beat Chicago tomorrow, it makes it a lot more difficult, right? Suddenly you're like, well, wait a second. You've won four games in a row. You know, the teams around you, I mean, Dallas, what? They've lost, I think they lost three in a row.
They beat Montreal on
Thursday. But I'm saying they just recently lost three in a row. They have games in hand on the Jets, but still, like, they're not, they haven't been playing lights out. Vegas is in complete free fall, and they've lost all these guys. Anaheim's lost guys, you know, so it's not like the team's ahead
of them. Anaheim's also going to trade some more players, right, Dave? Like, in addition to Dave Manson, Lindholm's going to be traded, right? So
that's right.
Yeah. Josh Manson got traded too, not Dave.
Yeah.
I said Manson.
Yeah. You said Dave Manson.
Oh, did I say Dave Manson? I meant to say Josh Manson. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
I've been spending too much time in the River Heights back lanes, guys. Sorry.
Seriously. And the point
the
is
fumes that are getting to you.
The point is, what do you do? Like, if Kevin Cheveldayoff hasn't spoken to those guys or their agents to find out what the likelihood is of them staying, and he finds out that he'll look at the numbers and say, well, I don't know how we're going to keep Andrew Kopp for whatever it is he thinks he wants next year, which I don't think is the value he'll bring to this team anyways. Mm-hmm. Because remember, this is where he's going to cash in. And this is traditionally where GMs make mistakes. So this is where you don't want to be the GM who makes that mistake. You want to think, do we have someone in our organization? Now, again, Kevin Sheldon has to look at what this team is going to look like 3 years down the line, which is why you want to recoup assets now that could potentially have that sort of impact then. But I just, again, if he hasn't done his due diligence, which I suspect he would have. I mean, we joked about it last night. I went back last night when I was working on the papers and I listened to his media availability with Sarah. I mean, he didn't say, he said absolutely nothing. Other than, to be honest with you, the only thing he said was, looking for middle six help. I was like, okay, you know what you should do? Get Mason Appleton then. but anyways, so I just look at it and think to myself, he can't afford not to trade these guys. I just don't see how you retain them with the way the team is going, with the results that you've had.
And can you not get a second round pick for Stastny, Dave? Like, I would think that if it's not a second rounder, you can get a third round pick.
I think you probably can, Ezzy, but my point is, so look at this. I mean, future cast a little bit. We know where the bulk of the Jets' depth is in the organization. It's on the back end. Mm-hmm. So Kopp is gone. That's clear. The money doesn't work. The numbers don't work. It doesn't work for next year. But if Paul Stastny goes as well, and I know I saw people in the chat saying, well, trade him and then re-sign him. I mean, that's happened so very rarely that it's almost, not worth, for the purposes of this discussion, really considering. But if Stastny is gone next year, look at the Jets forward group and tell me that it's not a very thin forward group. I know Cole Perfetti will probably come in and he probably will spend the whole year with the Jets, you would assume. Mm-hmm. But you have, look, Vesalainen and Jansen Harkins last night played 3 minutes each. So clearly, the current coaching staff, which should not be here next year if the season continues on the trajectory it's going, don't have any faith in those guys to be contributors on a regular basis. So you subtract Stastny and you subtract Kopp, you add Perfetti. There's still not a lot of depth, especially in that.
Well, you're gonna add Gustafson as well.
You're gonna add Gustafson too, but again, you don't.
Sorry to interrupt you. I'm just gonna quickly say we also don't know what they would do in free agency with a limited amount of money, right? Because in theory, you would have some money. Like you're gonna get some of that's gonna go to Pierre-Luc Dubois' next contract. But I'm just saying. I mean,
but you never.
Winnipeg, you have to have a contingency plan for Andrew Kopp and Paul Stastny. It's Cole Perfetti is gonna play in the top six next year, Drew. But your point is well taken. That you take Stastny and Kopp out of there, all of a sudden you don't look as deep as you did before you traded those guys.
I could, if they could sign Paul Stastny at the current contract for another year, I wouldn't have a problem with it. Now, that said, I don't think you can hold on to him without that commitment past Monday. In fact, if there's a deal to get done, it has to get done in the next, 48, plus hours. Because
preferably while we're on the air.
Preferably this morning before 11 a.m. Central Time, certainly. That would be that would be best case scenario for everybody involved here. But I could certainly see that argument at a similar cost to what he currently makes. Whereas the idea of bringing back Andrew Kopp at this point in time, that ship has sailed. And frankly, I think that I think you were the one who said it, Dave, Andrew Kopp at, whatever salary he's going to make next year.
It's going to be over five. It's going to be over five.
You think it's going to be over five? I mean,
I don't think.
If it isn't, it's going to be somewhere around there.
Four and a half to $5 million.
And I think that's a bullet dodged by the Jets. I don't think Andrew Kopp is worth that amount of money. And that's not.
Well, I think he's worth. Hold on. I just want to say one thing. I think Kopp is an excellent player. He has been a loyal soldier for the Jets. Mm-hmm. I think, he's like Dave said, this is his big payday, right? Like it's like, when I, held out for a legal curve and you guys had to pay me the big bucks, right? Like Andrew Kopp's going to get a big 5-year deal. I think we'd probably say 4 or 5 year deal, maybe six. Yeah. But I think the issue is he's in his late 20s now. And it's not that he's not worth it now. I think it's the future value, right? Like I think, that contract isn't going to look great when he's 32 or 33.
I don't think he's worth much more than even now. If you were paying him $4.5 million this year, and his production is what his production is, I think you're sort of holding your nose a little bit at that. I don't think you're thrilled at the value you're getting out of that. Andrew Kopp is a, he's a third line player, I would say, on a deep team. That's where he's best suited. And if you really can't afford to pay those guys, you know, in the $4.5 million range.
That's just it, Drew. Like, again, you know, we're not saying that, you know, Andrew Cobb doesn't deserve to be paid, because based on the economics of the NHL, yeah, he's going to get $4.5 to $5 million. But the point is that the Jets are already up against the salary cap. So especially like a team like Detroit, or, you know, a team that has much more salary cap space, it makes a lot more sense. But I think especially for the Jets, where every single dollar you have to really manage, I think that's what the issue is when you have to re-sign Dubois. And, you know that a guy like Cole Perfetti, I mean, he's going to get a raise, you know, after he comes out of his entry-level deal. So I just think right now they just can't simply afford him, like you said.
He's a luxury the Jets can't afford. And as a result, the strong expectation is that he'd be traded between now and Monday's deadline. One last comment before we go to break, because Scotty Billick's going to join us. By the time the Jets start their game on Sunday in Chicago, the Dallas Stars might be 6 points up on the Jets. The Stars play this afternoon in New York against the Islanders, and then they play tomorrow afternoon in Washington. So if Dallas puts together a good streak, and the game against Washington won't be over, so the result won't be fully known. It'll be known by the time postgame starts tomorrow night. The Jets could be 6 points behind the Dallas Stars ahead of Monday's trade deadline. And if you're down 6 points to Dallas and they still have games in hand, you know that you're not catching up at that point in time. That's why last night's loss to Boston was doubly as significant for the Winnipeg Jets. Scotty Billick up next. Take a break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Saturday morning. Gotcha there, Scotty.
Scotty.
Already.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. Saturday morning. Good. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and the startled one himself, Scotty Billick of the Winnipeg Sun on the program. Here to talk more about the Winnipeg Jets, the trade deadline coming up on Monday afternoon, with the latest, of course, here on IllegalCurve.com. And Scotty will have the latest for the Winnipeg Sun. Scotty, good morning. Nice to see you, buddy. How are things?
Yeah, it's early.
It's early.
But it's good. Yeah. No, I'm good.
Did you go for two junior McChickens last night also?
No, that would have been nice. So did you? Which one of you did that?
Yes. Well,
that would be Scotty. I picked up a nice little Oreo McFlurry as well. And then what ended up happening was before the Jets game, I got stuck behind my garage on the way to Dave's house. He's also here in River Heights. And then what happened is I got stuck in the exact same place after I picked up my McDonald's. So Dave and his significant other, Sylvia, had to come out and push me out of the back lane. So I'm now parked in the front. It's ridiculous. I saw you tweeting about it a little bit. It's just like back lanes in Winnipeg right now. It's just like it's brutal, like an adventure.
Yeah, everywhere is an adventure. It's horrible. And if it's not... it's not rutted or whatever, it's flooding. So, yeah, it's just no fun.
No fun indeed. Scotty, obviously the Jets losing last night 4-2 to the Boston Bruins. A lesson in not playing a full 60 minutes, because the Jets decided to show up for about 10 or 15 of the 60, and that's not enough against a quality opponent like the Boston Bruins. Not enough against most any opponent in the NHL.
Yeah.
With last night's loss, do you think that changes their philosophy at all as it pertains to the upcoming trade deadline on Monday? If they were able to hold on, if they were able to defeat Boston, with the schedule actually getting easier starting tomorrow against Chicago, and really the games all this coming week are, you know, depending on what happens with Vegas, might be all against teams out of a playoff spot. Do you think that would have changed their philosophy at all?
No, I don't think so. No, I mean, I think this team is well aware of where it is. Well aware of, you know, even though it's just 4 points, right? Like that's what it looks like. Even last night, a win last night would have put them back 2 points. It's still a large mountain to climb. You have a Dallas team that has two games in hand still. And with the ability obviously to surpass Vegas as well in that spot. And I don't think so. I mean, the Jets the Jets obviously have options at the trade deadline, but I mean, if you're looking to kind of maximize what you have, you probably want to sell your UFAs and get something for them. Do they stand pat to try and make the playoffs when you don't really control your own destiny? Like that's an interesting you know, as much as who was it, Nate Schmidt yesterday said, you know, that talked about all the, you know, they do, their destiny is in their hands. I mean, it's really not, right? Like, I mean, yeah, aside from, you know, winning the next 20 games and scoring 40 points and, you know, doing something that no other NHL team ever has by winning 20, you know, straight games. You know, but if that's the case, right? I mean, then you're happy with the team that you have going into the playoffs. So, you know, it's interesting to me, and you know, I don't know where we're going to go with all of this, but to me, there's two kind of opposing views on this, and they might come from within the hockey, you know, organization, where it's you have your hockey ops, and you have your corporate operations. And you're like, man, we've just gone through, like, you know, basically 2 years of, you know, most of the time not even having fans in the building. Revenue has been really bad. You know, do you want to have people, like, what happens if in let's say they lose the next, you know, three of the next five and they're really out of it, right? Mm-hmm. How many people are coming to the game? They're not selling out the games as it is right now. So there must be a temptation there, I think, from a corporate side, from a business, purely business side of the game, to make this going down to the wire and have butts in the seat, make it exciting, right? And then if you sneak into the back door of the, you know, the wild card race, you know, that's huge, right? Like those two games, like even if you only get two games against, you know, assuming the Colorado Avalanche, that's massive for business, right? Like those are gates pretty much double in the playoffs. You have other things, the street parties, all that stuff. Like it's all revenue that would come in. Like that's got to be what's tempting the Jets to be, you know, not necessarily buyers, because they can't really be buyers. Shoveldayoff said it last night on an interview with TSN Sarah Leski during the first intermission that any deals that they do has to be money in and money out, right? Because that's just that's where they are with the salary cap. They're right up against it. They also have some injury, some LTIR that they have to worry about. Are those guys going to be back before the end of the season? So any deals likely would have Paul Stastny or Andrew Copp involved them, and then who do you bring in? But, you know, I can just see from a business standpoint with this team – and just take hockey out of it, which is, you know, you can't really take hockey out, but the hand in hand is that, you know, this is a team that it doesn't want to have 15 games remaining with nothing to play for, because, you know, who wants to shell out hundreds of dollars to come to a hockey game on a team that, you know, failed this season to live up to expectations, should not be in this position that they are right now. And then to, you know, ask them to spend more and more money when, you know, there's lots of other things that you can do. And you've come through a pandemic where people have become, you know, it's seemingly at least more okay with watching a game from home, because it's, you know, one that's just safer, I suppose, and cheaper, obviously, cheaper, and that sort of thing. Yeah. You know, so like those are the things, right? Like, I mean, I think this is one of the first years where this team really has to think about, you know, what's best for kind of both sides, right? Does making the playoffs, is that good from a hockey standpoint? I'm not entirely sure it is. You know, like what is the making the playoffs this year do for you? I mean, if you don't sell, let's say you keep Andrew Copp and Paul Stastny and just be like, hey, we believe in this team. And this is a team that we want, you know, we think that can win and make the playoffs. Well, you lose out on future assets, or, you know, just bringing in guys, let's say, you know, Jake DeBrusk or, I don't know, Dominic Kubalik. Those are the names that have kind of been thrown around. I mean, obviously there could be more that comes around, but, you know, I just wonder, you know, I wonder what kind of happens, you know, from that standpoint, from the business standpoint of, you know, they've lost a lot of money this year, and it's obvious. I mean, the team has taken this wild change to get rid of multi-year season ticket holder contracts, and now people can just re-up year after year and all of that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's interesting, and that's kind of where, you know, I wonder, you know, kind of where those kind of intersect and kind of how that kind of plays out for the Jets. But, you know, to answer your original question, I don't think it really changes much, because I think this team knows where it kind of is. And the odds are stacked, you know, reasonably against them, right? It is still a long shot for them to make the playoffs, because they have to make up a lot of ground, and it's really difficult to do so, as the Jets are finding out right now. You can barely lose a game, right? I mean, they really needed at least a point last night against Boston, and they didn't get it. You know, like, that's sort of the thing. Like, if you lose, you kind of sort of have to lose in overtime right now because you need that win, and then you just need a lot of help. And the night before on Thursday night, it wasn't a lot of help because all the teams that they're chasing won, except for Vancouver. But, you know, again, you need Dallas and Vegas really to falter. You need one of the two to kind of falter. Well, probably both of them in the end, right? Unless, you know, Nashville kind of goes on a slide. So, yeah, it's interesting, and it is tough. And, yeah, I'm not entirely sure kind of what Monday looks like from that standpoint. But, yeah, it's going to be it's interesting, and it's a brand new kind of storyline in this town. It'll be interesting to watch.
Scotty, what have you thought of a couple of the trades that we've seen in the last 48 hours? I mean, when Brandon Hagel was traded to Tampa Bay, you know, I'm thinking, okay, we knew that there was a good chance that the Hawks were going to deal Hagel. And then, you know, you see that it's for 2023 first round pick, 2024 first round pick. We talked about how it's lottery protected, and I agree with Drew. I think that was a mistake on the Blackhawks part. But then you also have a couple of, you know, 23, 24 year old prospects in Taylor Radish and Boris Kachuk. And Dave would know, I mean, these guys have been in the AHL for a couple of years, and then this year they've been playing in the NHL with the Lightning. But I mean, those are guys that, you know, the Hawks will be able to plug into their lineup in the coming years. I thought that was a massive return for the Blackhawks. So, I mean, what does that do in terms of what you could get for Andrew Kott? Because if I'm Chevy, right, I'm loving what Chicago got for Brandon Hagel.
Yeah, no, I mean, the prices are high, right? I mean, that's the other side of this, right? I mean, you know, what is the return for Andrew Kopp? Because, you know, he's going to be in a highly wanted player. And the reason, you know, let's say, like, this is the thing, like, does Colorado going to want Andrew Kopp if they don't get Claude Giroux? And it seems by all accounts that Claude Giroux wants to go to Florida, and the Flyers are trying to facilitate a move to get him to Florida. And so that means that the Colorado Avalanche are going to be looking for, somebody that's not Claude Giroux. And, you know, Andrew Kopp is right at the top of that list of, you know, kind of players that teams want. You know, I think Boston's involved, they might want him, and that's kind of where the Jake DeBrus kind of stuff comes from, because it could be, you know, kind of a one for one there or whatever that would be in terms of return. I have to remember too that Jake DeBrusk is, I believe it's a $4.1 million qualifying offer that he's owed. So, mm-hmm. You know, the Jets have to factor that into any trade because
buyer,
you know,
beware a little bit there with that price tag.
Well, and that's it, right? Because here's the thing, like, you don't want to, well, one, you don't want to take a guy if you don't think, well, one, that you can sign him. You know, Jake DeBrusk wants out of Boston, but he largely didn't want to be playing on the third line there. Well, you know, there's possibility that he plays up higher in the lineup with the Jets, and it just depends on kind of what they do. But it could be the same situation here for Jake DeBrus, where he's playing on a third line role. And then what does that mean, right? So so that's interesting. But yeah, I mean, you know, you start seeing first round picks getting thrown around, and then you think about, okay, well, maybe the Jets want to get back into the first round this year after trading out of it in years past. So, you know, and just kind of replenishing the draft pick pool. Are they in the first round this year? The Jets, are they?
Yeah, do they have a first round pick?
They don't have a second.
They have a second, yeah. They don't have a second and a fourth, right? Yeah, but, you know, I could see them wanting
to get the Rangers, Scotty?
And technically,
what? Yeah, the fourth
round pick is going to the Rangers, yeah.
Right,
I believe. And it might go to the third.
Yeah.
And it might end up going to the Panthers as part of the who was the trade that the Panthers and the Rangers made earlier this week?
Frank Vetrano.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting because, you know, Kevin Sheveldaev has always been a draft guy, and does he want to replenish, you know, go back from the five picks that he has now to maybe six or seven or whatever. But, you know, I think the Jets, I don't know if that's the right thing. Is it prospects that you want? Is it guys that are, you know, 2 to 3 years away, or maybe even a year away from being in the NHL? So maybe they're not in here next season. And, you know, what's the window for this team? Are you looking to extend the window? Does the window only last as long as Connor Hellebuck and Mark Scheifele are signed here? You know, that's where it's interesting with this team, because you would say that, well, if you look at this season and, you know, would have been different if Cole Perfetti was healthy, would have been different. You know, I don't know if that changes a whole lot in the grand scheme, because this is a team that still struggled a lot with puck management, has struggled a lot with just consistency. Look at last night's game as a perfect example. The second period, they get outshot 22-4, right? Like, that's not going to win you a lot of hockey games. And sure, they had a great third period comeback, but then they just, you know, the penalties, like, that doesn't help, you know? And so you kind of buckle down in the third, you get two goals, and then you're feeling better about your game, and then you get scored on a delay of game penalty. That was, you know, those are unforced errors, right? And it was very much a, you know, kind of a Jets way to lose last night, so to speak. So, yeah, I don't know, you know, you still wonder, you know, do you think you can re-sign Andrew Kopp? And I've heard some people suggest that, and I just don't think that's the case. I mean, I think if the Jets wanted to re-sign Andrew Kopp, they would have already, but I don't think they want to pay what Andrew Kopp is probably worth on the open market. And, you know, and they're going to have some big contracts coming up. None bigger than Pierre-Luc Dubois. You know, maybe he bridges for another 2 years. But even that bridge dollar amount is going to be expensive if that's what they want him to do, right? It might save him a little bit of money for 2 years, and then they can pay him more when Scheifele and Hellebuck and Wheeler's contracts are all up in a couple of years for that. Yeah, like, I mean, that's the hockey tempting side of it, right? I mean, the prices that these guys are going to fetch, specifically, I think Andrew Kopp, could fetch on Monday or before Monday, depending on how, you know, the Giroux situation shakes out and if Colorado wants to pay the price. I mean, I think that's sort of where you want. I just, you know, you sort of think that you want a roster play in return, because you want to kind of retool and go at it again next year. You don't want to set yourself back and kick the can down the road again. You know, this is a team that's been pretty good at kicking the can down the road and not really having anything to show for it, though, because it, you know, that's all they keep doing. So yeah, that's where it's a weird spot to be in, because, you know, you could keep it together and try and go for it, or you could get rid of the two UFAs and try and bring in something with term or picks or prospects. And those things are all appealing, I think. It's just, which one do you pick? I mean, do you go hard at, you know, selling those two guys and then bringing in, you know, trying to find a way to get DeBrusk here or Dominic Kubalik or, you know, somebody else, you know, somebody else that we don't even know yet, right? Other teams that have cap issues that you want to, you know, you want to try and pillage, for lack of a better term, and try and get a good player, you know, for a reasonable price, because it's just, they have to kind of get rid of it. But those seem like summer moves to me more than anything, right? You know, when it comes to teams wanting to get better in the summer, they got to move out cap space and that sort of thing. You know, it's hard to find a contender that's willing to sell a decent piece at this time of the year to get another piece, because they probably want to keep the piece that they have too, and then find another way to do the other thing. So, yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, I think the prices, to answer your question, is, yeah, I think the prices are going to be very tempting, because it looks like there's a lot of teams this year, three or four at least, that are willing to spend big to take a run at this, because they think that they have a good chance. You know, Florida and Colorado definitely being up there. We'll see. I think Tampa Bay is probably done at this point. And then you got other teams like Calgary and teams like that. Who knows what, you know, teams like the
Tampa
Leafs,
Bay has,
you know,
no more draft picks left to trade.
Oh, that's true. And you know, here's the thing with Tampa. I mean, I tweeted about it yesterday. I love what Julian Brisebois does, right? It's kind of like, now this is a family show, but, you know, kind of grab the gentleman's region and kind of go for it, right? I mean, that's kind of it. You know, he doesn't seem to care that, you know, like for Tampa Bay, here's the thing, right? They're getting rid of these prospects that you alluded to that were in the NHL this year but had played in the NHL, because there's really no room for them on that team. It's so stacked. It's hard to, you know, find room for these guys, so they can afford to move these guys out. And, you know, here's the thing. I mean, they have two banners already. What does a third do to this? You know, I mean, if you win three in a row, I mean, you're arguably one of the greatest teams of all time. If not, you know, especially in this modern era where it's so difficult to
it's designed to prevent
two-peat, right? Exactly, right? Yeah. And so I think it's incredible what Julian Breezeball is doing, because he just doesn't seem to care. There's no caution here. It's just like, yeah, we're going for it. And but Tampa's in an interesting market, because you can sign a Nikita Kucherov for less than $10 million a year. Because if he made $12 million in Canada, he's still taking home more, paying for $9 million in a tax-free state like Florida, than he is playing up here. So, you know, that's the advantage that Tampa has.
Well, and the salary cap is not actually equitable, to your point. It's not an equitable right. salary cap from market to market.
Exactly. And so I think it's really interesting that, you know, here's a team that can kind of do what, you know, what the Panthers seem to be sort of getting on board with now. It's just spending and selling off draft picks and that sort of thing, because, you know, a lot of people want to play in Florida. Like, if you have a good team in Florida, you know, players just want to go there because it's a nice place to be. And then at the, you know, on the second, you get to take home a lot more of your contract than you would in most markets, because just because of how taxes work. And so that's interesting. That's why, you know, that's why Vegas gets away with kind of murder at times, right? Because, you know, teams want to play, or players want to play in Vegas, and it's easy to do so when you're not paying any taxes. You know, so yeah, I really enjoy, like, I mean, people will say, well, why did, you know, Breezeball give up so much? Well, here's a GM that goes out and gets a player that they think is going to fit perfectly into what they're doing. This is the same thing they did with Blake Coleman last year, or some of the other players that they got. Right, they're looking just for players that will plug and fit a certain role to help them win a Stanley Cup, because they have all the other bases covered. Right, their goaltending is unbelievable. They have a good defense. Their power play is unreal. Scoring can seemingly happen at will. So a lot of the players that they have. I think you're like, oh well, why did you spend so much? Why are you helping out Chicago with their rebuild or whatever? I don't think Tampa Bay cares about any of that, because if they win three straight cups. You know, they're the team, right? They're the team. It's not Chicago that won three in, you know, 6 years or whatever. This is the Tampa Bay Lightning that won three in 3 years, and did so with largely the same team and made all the right moves. And if they have a couple of Chicago years, like Chicago is having right now, because that happens, well, who cares? Because you have three banners. Like, I mean, I think this is, you know, what would Jets fans want, right? If the Jets fan, yeah. Let's say you... If you could sell Ville Heinola in a first round pick right now and guarantee yourself a banner, I think every fan would take that, right? Because at the end of the day, you know, the quoted banners fly forever, right? I think that is what it is, right? Like, a Stanley Cup is so crucial to every team, right? It's massive for all sorts of reasons, and especially here in Canada, right? If this Jets team was the first Jets team to win a Stanley Cup since Montreal and won one before Toronto, right? I mean, there's so many like intricacy, nuance, bragging rights that the Jets would have. And so I think you would sell anything, right, to win a Stanley Cup. And that's what Tampa Bay is doing, right? They'll do what it takes to get there. And then they'll draft Braden Point in the third round and they'll be fine with it, right? You know, but yeah. It's interesting, right? Because, you know, that's what they do. And they're very good at kind of finding gems later on in the draft, even in the second and third round. Because, you know, what's the appreciable difference between a 31st overall pick or, you know, even an early pick in the third round? I don't know, right? I mean, you know, because you never know. I mean, you know, we're kind of dealing with that here in Winnipeg with Christian Vesalainen. Here's a guy drafted in the later round or later picks of the first round, but isn't really turning out to be, you know, a quote-unquote first-round draft pick, right? You know, the Jets have Evgeny Svechnikov. He was taken in the teens in or maybe it was 19 or 17 back in 2015. There's a guy that didn't turn into what, you know, people thought he might be at the time. And maybe he will eventually, but, you know, it's been 7 years since he was drafted, I think. So, well, yeah.
It goes to the saying, not all first-round picks are created equally. Right. We certainly see that evidence of that all throughout the NHL, not specific to the Jets. But, you know, different years have different qualities and different depth and everything else along those lines. It's Saturday morning. Scott Billick is our guest. You're live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show talking about the Winnipeg Jets defeat last night at the hands of the Boston Bruins, and looking ahead to Monday's trade deadline, where, of course, coverage will be had all day courtesy of us at Illegal Curve, and of course, Scotty doing his great work with the Winnipeg Sun, Dave.
Yeah, and Scott, you know, the trade deadline may be anticlimactic. I mean, the focus, nobody's really
anticipating. When is it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it seems, especially now, because so many moves have already kind of taken place leading up to it. But I don't think anybody anticipated the Jets making a, quote, big splash. I think the idea was Cobb, right. Stastny, maybe Beaulieu. That was it. Those are the guys whose names are out there. So realistically, the expectation is those are the only three guys. I don't think anybody's coming out of you know, left field and just randomly making a huge trade with the Winnipeg Jets. But what do you see? You talked about it, right? And I'm not suggesting that you have to make the decision for the Winnipeg Jets, whether it's a retool, whether it's a rebuild. I mean, nobody's expecting a rebuild, but that idea of retooling. I mean, the Jets have a tremendous glut in the back end from their prospects. And they really don't have it in the top upper echelon guys, right? They've got, from the forward perspective, you've got David Gustafson, who I think could be like an Andrew Copp-like, and they've got Cole Perfetti, realistically. Those are your two kind of guys that you're focusing on. But the thing with the Jets is, and it's unfortunate in the sense that it takes the decision out of Kevin Cheveldayoff's hands, he doesn't really have to worry about waivers for most of those defensive prospects, especially on the left side, which is where he has his big glut anyways next year. It's really just Johnny Kovacevic and Leon Gavante, right. who are on the right side, who are your guys who are no longer waiver exempt. So do you but again, like I said, he still has to make decisions, I think, because there is that logjam for years, really. Nate Schmidt, Brendan Dillon, right? Logan Stanley, in theory. So how do you see that playing out from this Jets team? Do you think that he starts to use those assets, those prospects, to start retooling, reacquiring players to be able to play up front for this Jets club in that kind of middle six?
Yeah, I mean, that is the interesting thing, right? I mean, and so this is the part where, like, not every fan is going to be happy with what happens, because either they're going to sell a guy like Dylan DeMetal, who a lot of fans consider one of the team's best defensive defensemen. They're going to find a way maybe at some point to either trade a Brendan Dillon, who is probably their most physical defenseman, and is, you know, can be a game changer in that regard. Or they're going to sell guys like Ville Heinola and Dylan Samberg. I don't think they're going to sell Dylan Samberg. I think they like what he brings in terms of both just being really defensively responsible and physical. And so I wonder, you know, I wonder if Ville Heinola is on the block, and I wonder, because he is the type of player that commands a big return, right? If you want to go out into this summer and retool on the fly and get a big name player to, let's say, a middle six guy or top six winger, whatever it is, and you're looking at a team that's willing to, you know, take a young, you know, promising prospect. I wonder if that's what it is. And obviously that's going to be one of those things where it's like, that's not what anybody wants. Everybody wants to see Ville Heinola playing on this defensive, in this defensive core. And so do I. You know, I think he's been one of those guys who has been really unlucky in terms of, you know, obviously they signed both of the guys, Schmidt and Dillon, in the summer. So that kind of pushed, you know, a lot of those players back. You know, Logan Stanley and Nathan Beaulieu have kind of been the guys that kind of played this year. And Ville Heinola has only gotten a little bit of time in the lineup. And it doesn't seem that they're kind of willing to, you know, put him in. And so that's where I wonder, like, well, if you're not willing, or if he's a couple years off and you're trying to win in the next couple years, is that the guy that you trade? I don't know. I mean, do they look at trading Nate Schmidt? I think they like what Nate Schmidt brings, though, right? Like, you know, that's the other thing where you kind of you wonder, you know, okay, how much value does Nate Schmidt have to the room, right? This is a room that in past years has got really down on itself and never really had that kind of pick me up. Nate Schmidt is that guy. I mean, we talked to him yesterday. He's got the emotional range of a teaspoon. Like, the dude's hilarious, right? He's funny, but that's the way he is with all the players. I mean, he talks to a lot of these guys. And especially when, you know, he talked about talking to Ville Heinola, he talked about talking to Logan Stanley. So those are the tough things, right? And you know, that's where you can't keep it all, you know, because eventually you keep it all, you just have either way too many contracts, you don't have the room under a salary cap, or you have the problem the Jets have right now where they can't fit these young players in just because, well, they have so much money invested on their blue line right now, that you're not going to sit Schmidt or Dillon or whoever. maybe they look at moving Neil Pionk. I don't know. He's had a bad year, right? I mean, it hasn't been a great year for Neil Pionk. Do they look at moving him? I don't think, I mean, I see, you know, trade Morrissey in the chat here. I think Morrissey probably the only untouchable in that blue run, right? Here's a guy that checks off every box that this organization wants and could possibly be captain material in a couple years' time, right? I don't think, you know, Josh Morrissey is going anywhere. I also think Josh Morrissey's had a great year. So, I mean, here's a bounce back year after his dad died, you know, last summer and was dealing with a lot of stuff in that. I mean, we have to
look at the Jets. Their Jets are not trading Morrissey. No. I'm with you 100% on that one, right, Scotty.
I mean, you have to look at the human side of this, too. I mean, here's a guy playing with his dad dying. That's brutal. And then you think, you know, just a couple bad years from him. Well, you know, a year and a half of that was trying to deal with what was going on back home in Calgary. I mean, that's
Also look who he was playing with. Look who his on ice partner was.
Right.
I mean, he's trying to play his own game and compensate for having a below replacement level D partner for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, he's being anchored down right for the last couple of years. I mean, nobody was more unlucky in the last 2 years, at least on defense, when everybody left after the 2018-19 season. Right, than Josh Morrissey, because here was a guy that, you know, maybe is just a 1B on this team, you know, in the grand scheme of things, because he was playing with, you know, another kind of 1A or 1-1, you know, 1A with Jacob Trouba, and then just kind of left on his own island, right, to kind of hopefully, you know, prop up Tucker Poolman or whoever they would put beside him. It was unfair, you know, and there was nothing that Josh could do about that. Signs a brand new deal after that year. You know, all that weight of expectation, obviously the personal stuff that happened, you know, so all those things. So, yeah, I don't think Josh Morrissey is going anywhere, and I don't think they have any interest in trading him because he's the type of player that this organization likes. You know, so, yeah, I don't know who they trade. I think all those questions move into the summer, though, right? So here's the other thing. Are they going to look to shop Mark Scheifele this summer? And if they do, what kind of trade are they going to make for him? Is that a mistake to shop a guy like Mark Scheifele? Here's a guy who obviously everybody knows the deficiencies in the defensive end. But at the offensive end, here's a guy who just puts up point after point after point. And, you know, he had a bad year, but Mark Scheifele's a point-per-game player in a bad year. Right. And so that's kind of where that argument is. It's like, what do you do? I mean, you know, here's a guy who at times doesn't look like he's interested in playing. But when he is look like he's a world beater, when he is interested or looks, appears interested in playing, and he's very good. That's the thing. Nobody's going to be happy with what they do, I think, this summer, because it's going to irk people one way or the other, whether it's selling one of these, you know, bona fide kind of top five or six guys, or if they look to move a guy like Ville Heinola to try and find that piece that they're missing. Large part of this, too, you know, I think comes down to what are they going to do with the coaching situation in the summer? Is it Dave Lowry moving forward? Or is it somebody else? Do you redo the whole coaching staff? I mean, here's the problem. This team needs to deal with its defensive woes, right? Here's a team that needs a defensive structure. Or at the very least, you know, they just need a game plan that makes sense. You know, people crap on Connor Hellebuck this year, but you have to realize again, right, for the umpteenth year. I mean, it's not in the teens, obviously, he hasn't been here that long, but here's a guy who's just facing the most shots, the most high danger shots, and all this stuff, right? All the analytics, at least before Hellebuck had that bigger slump recently, that was still in the top five, top 10 in most analytics for NHL goaltenders in a quote unquote bad or down year. So, you know, Connor Hellebuck needs some help too, right? Especially if you want to re-sign this guy. You know, if you want to re-sign Connor Hellebuck in a couple years' time when he's, you know, like 29, I guess he'll be, or whatever it is, and, you know, that's not old, it's not that old for a goaltender, and you want to get him under contract again, and maybe he wins another Vezina in that time or is a finalist or whatever. I mean, Connor Hellebuck's going to look at the situation and hope that he has some help around him at this point. You know, because as much as goalies like to be active in games and do things, we obviously have seen a fatigued Connor Hellebuck down the stretch here, right? He was played a ton And when you're facing, you know, 100 more shots than most every other goalie in the NHL this season, I mean, when you think about 100 shots, it's about 3 games more worth of shots that you've seen, right? Like, you know, maybe on average, right? Roughly around that. You know, they need to give him some help, right?
Yeah. And season after season, it adds up, and it's a cumulative effect, right, of the wear and tear on a goaltender.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, that's the thing. So you can either sell what you have right now on defense that's playing in the NHL and try and retool doing that, or you can sell some of your prospects that you're not even playing and try and use those as bargaining chips for roster pieces to teams that are looking to rebuild, right? So the Ottawas, the Chicagos, whoever. I mean, can you go and, you know, go to those teams and try and find a top 6 player and package that with a guy like Billy Heinel or whatever for a team that, you know, is young, that it continues to do those types of things. So, yeah, it'll be very interesting to see. And I know, like, that's not going to be what people want. And I don't know who's going to do that too, right? If the Jets miss the playoffs this year, which looks like, you know, it's Kevin Cheval day off, even the GM, this summer. And I wonder if standing pat at the trade deadline is kind of a bit of a tell on that too. Sure. You know, that maybe he doesn't have perhaps the control over the situation, you know, or maybe no big moves are going to be allowed other than the ones with your UFAs. Because they need to assess at the end of the year what, you know, what is the actual plan going forward here. And is Kevin Cheveldayoff the right guy to do it at this point? You know, 11 years and going into, you know, what would be his 12th season. So that's the other thing, right? It's like there's a lot of decisions to be made this summer. And we haven't even started writing about that because, you know, we're still talking about a trade deadline and, you know, the Jets on, you know, with these faint hopes of a playoff berth. So, yeah, I mean, that's the larger issue that, you know, I'm sure we'll get to in the coming months. But, it obviously has its kind of, you know, I guess tentacles, if you will, kind of already in it, because you don't know, you know, how much control maybe right now, you know, Chevy has. And maybe he has it all. Maybe we're all wrong and say maybe he's not on the hot seat. You know, maybe the seat isn't as hot as we think it is for him. But, you know, eventually, you know, 12,000 some odd people every night at the game is going to add up, and you need to build a winner here. I mean, that's our, you know, that's what keeps fans in the seats in a Canadian market is a winning team, an exciting team. And the Jets used to have that, and now they don't. And that's kind of the reality of the situation right now.
More questions than answers for this Winnipeg Jets team. It'll be a fascinating next 48 or so hours until the trade deadline, and certainly a fascinating offseason when we look ahead to that in the coming months. Scott Billick will have it all covered for the Winnipeg Sun. He's a good friend of this program. Scotty, appreciate it. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Have a great weekend. We'll do it again real soon, buddy.
You've earned some mustard packets, Scotty. Go have your morning mustard.
That's right. You know, you guys, Dave needs a beard, right? Like, I mean, you look at you two, you both kind of have the nice, thick little bit of like salt and pepper right around here, right?
No chance.
Then Dave's just like, no beard.
No, I've never seen Dave. Cut. I think would it be too salt and pepper, Dave? Is that why you're hiding it from us?
No. I think I let it grow once when I was backpacking through Europe. And other than that, I don't think I've ever had anything resembling that. I'm not a facial hair guy.
Well, the chat needs to get involved here. And
I don't think
pretty much
you know, I'm to sure, do it. So. You know, I mean, Scott, what we maybe will do is maybe someone can like put a beard. I'll take Ezzy's beard and I'll get one of our graphics guys.
I was going to say, Dave, you can have some of my beard. We've got enough here. Look at this thing. I can give you some.
Scott, it's all good. Ezzy's in my on my main floor. So what I'll do is we'll just go and shave him after, and then I'll just
there come we go. Back. Just patch it.
All patches all over the place.
Yeah, that's not weird at all.
No. I can't see this being a bad idea or backfiring in any which way.
Ezzy and I once shaved our Movembers live on TSN 1290. I mean, there's probably a reason why the station's no longer
around. I was going to say, it's hard Sabrina to believe Carter the radio Valley. Station failed. You know, hard to believe that kind of content didn't drive sponsors towards the station.
That's right.
We raised a lot of money for a good cause. That's all.
That's true. We raised money for a good cause. Anyways, Scotty, thank you, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Yeah. Have a good one, guys. Yeah.
Thanks, Scotty.
Scotty Bill joining us on the show. Let's take a break. When we come back, more Jets talk. Frank Saravelli, hockey insider at the bottom of the hour with the latest scuttlebutt about the trade deadline. Don't go anywhere. Much more to come. You're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. A strange question for you, but why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
Right. I'm sorry. That was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolly's and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolly's, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit rollys.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, it's Aaron from Bernstein's Deli.
That's right, Ezzy. I'm the guy who makes all your sandwich dreams come true.
So when you think Illegal Curve, what comes to you?
How about juicy chicken schnitzel, grilled salami, fried onions, melted cheddar cheese, and honey mustard on toasted thick-cut city rye bread?
Man, that's like the holy grail of sandwiches.
And so it shall be known as the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
The Illegal Curve Sandwich. Try it today at Bernstein's Deli. Find us at Corridon and Lanark or online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal, starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
10:15, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. A reminder, post-game show tomorrow. After the Jets and the Blackhawks, their game starts at 6 o'clock post-game. 8:45 p.m. or so. A very busy week upcoming for us at Illegal Curve. We got the last hour of the show this morning, obviously. We got post-game tomorrow night, post-game Tuesday night, post-game Thursday night, post-game Friday night, Saturday Icy Hockey Show, and then again post-game on Sunday.
Drew,
night.
You had a couple of Red Bulls this morning? Like, you're pretty energetic, baby.
I got some good coffee in here. That's all. It's just I'm high on life, Ezzy, and bath salts. High on life and bath salts.
Do you do Keurigs at the Mandel household, or do you do like a pot of coffee? What do you do?
Pot of coffee. Laura makes a pot of coffee every morning. First thing, she's up. She's up and downstairs.
Cracker dawn.
In the kitchen before I am, and the first thing she does, she might even have it set up to go the night before. She flips that switch and gets some nice coffee brewing in the house. That's how.
What kind of coffee do you guys do? Do you guys do McDonald's or Tim Hortons, or do you do something a little bit more local?
Something a little more local. We try and be a little bit more bougie. We like to support some of the local coffee manufacturers and producers, and tend to go that way with it. But to each their own, certainly. But shop local, that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
Yes, exactly. Jets and Blackhawks tomorrow in Chicago. The one-off road trip where the Jets fly out and then fly back. The Blackhawks actually in action today. They're in Minnesota to face the Wild. So it'll be the second half of a back-to-back for the Blackhawks. The Jets will have a little bit more rest on their hands. Comrie or Hellebuck tomorrow, gentlemen? I would go Comrie again for a lot of the other reasons I've outlined before, that we've all outlined before. You're going to need Comrie this week as well. You got the back-to-back. Presumably you'd start him in one of those, but maybe you choose not to because there's no travel involved. And as a result, you play him today and you give Hellebuck the time off between Friday and Tuesday's very key matchup against the Golden Knights of Vegas.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably 50-50 right now that you would see Erik Comrie. And I'm not saying that as a joke, because obviously it's one of those two goalies. I'm just saying I wouldn't lean towards Comrie necessarily, because, Drew, you nailed it, right? You've got the Ottawa-Columbus dreaded back-to-back at home. Obviously, I'm joking. But, I mean, look, the Senators in Columbus are going to be looking to play the role of spoiler, right? Both of those teams are not going to the playoffs. And so you know you're going to use Comrie most likely in the second game of that back-to-back. So personally, I'm kind of leaning towards, you know, Dave Lowry and the coaching staff rolling with Hellebuck tomorrow. I mean, even though the Jets, you know, failed to take advantage of an opportunity to get a point yesterday in the third period, this is also a must-win game. Like, the Jets are long shots to make the playoffs, but, I mean, they're still in it. And obviously, if you beat the Blackhawks, especially in regulation, you're doing yourself, you're contributing to your ability to get back into that second wild card spot. So I think, I mean, if I was personally the head coach, I probably would start Comrie, just because I think you reward him for how well he's played as of late. What does he have, 4 or 5 wins in a row? But I'm kind of leaning towards them going with Hellebuck, but we shall see.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's Hellebuck, Dave, but I think that would probably be a bit of a mistake. I mean, everything about tomorrow's game against Chicago screams trap game. Now, the Winnipeg Jets shouldn't be good enough, or shouldn't think that they're good enough that they can overlook any opponent, but we've seen how many times they seem to have done that this season. So you play, my philosophy, Comrie has certainly been up to the challenge this year. It keeps your focus a little bit sharper. It gives your number one goalie in Hellebuck a decent chunk of time off. It would really mean he plays one game in the span of a week, which is a pretty good break, you know, at this time of year. That's my philosophy, but, you know, Dave Lowry is the head coach of this team, so, you know, and we've seen him make stranger decisions than that.
Like not pulling his goaltender with a minute 20 to go in the third period down by a goal?
With the
opposing player in the penalty box and the face-off in their zone? Yeah, that's true.
That would be it.
I would suggest, though, that, look, I mean, you don't have to listen to me. You can listen to the other Dave Lowry, and hear what he had to say, right? What did he say when anybody is asked about Hellebuck and his workload? And he says, did he skate today? No, that means he had a day off, and that means he's ready to go the next day. So I'm no goalie guru. I would think that you would go there, Comrie, just because, like, as he just said, he's won 4 games in a row.
Yeah,
he's given you consistency in net from your backup, which is all you can ask for. You know, you really have to go back all the way to December to really think about a goal that was in that Vancouver game, that I think it was that December 17th game, where he gave up that one goal that he would have, you know, that one that beat it. It flipped it behind him, and he kind of looked like he was devastated after it went in. That's the real only kind of glaring, you know, error against him in the last few months of starts. Now, obviously, there haven't been a lot. But yeah, I mean, like, look, is tomorrow a must win? Yeah, but they all are really at this point. So, I mean, like, you're not going to use Garrett Comrie for the rest of the season. You have to get him into games.
Mm-hmm.
So tomorrow seems like, especially with Chicago, look, Chicago's no juggernaut, and Chicago isn't, and they're playing today. So, I mean, I think that you have an advantage. Your team knows what's at stake in the game tomorrow. And I don't think you have to put too much thought into it. Like you just said, give Hellebuck the night off. You give him some rest. He's rested. He's ready to go against Vegas on Tuesday. Then you play him Thursday against Ottawa, and then put Comrie in against Columbus.
You might even play him Thursday, Friday. I mean,
I don't know. And I know you've talked about how Hellebuck's numbers in the second game of a back-to-back have actually been pretty good, especially, mm-hmm. you know, with him not having to travel. That's clearly a positive. I don't really care. Get to that point. But I think that Comrie has shown you that you should have enough confidence in him that you can get 2 points with him in the net, especially against a team like Chicago. I mean, he's beaten better teams in Chicago this season, right? So it doesn't make it a guarantee. And look, this isn't all on Hellebuck, right? If the Jets aren't scoring, it doesn't really help.
Well, and if they're defending in the manner in which they defended, you know, yesterday with, you know, goalmouth scramble and just, you know, and letting the opposition hack and whack until the puck gets in the net, you know, that's certainly a problem. I mean, look, Bruce Cassidy's comments yesterday, we talked about them on the post-game show, where, you know, you don't usually hear a head coach of an opposition come out and say what he said about another team. Usually head coaches are only focused on their own team and they don't tend to criticize the opposition. And as much as his criticism was accurate and as much as his criticism was based on fact and truth, you don't often hear it. But boy, should that be a damning statement that the Winnipeg Jets should really take to heart and acknowledge that they are so woeful in front of their own net and so woeful in letting opposition get to the quote-unquote, you know, high danger areas that the other coach had no choice but to sort of call it out in his post-game comments. It really is a damning statement about the Jets and their defensive deficiencies this season.
Well, and it's not just the size of the defensemen, guys. Like, we know the Jets have a mixture of smaller defensemen, like, you know, Josh Morrissey, Neil Pionk, and then you have your bigger guys like Brendan Dillon and Logan Stanley. Everybody knows that, right? Mm-hmm. But it's team defense, right? Like, it's team structure, it's team strategy. It's not just, you know, a couple of small defensemen are easy. Like, Neil Pionk, for a smaller defenseman, and Dave would agree with this, we talk about this, you know, every so often, Pionk's a very physical player. I think a lot of Jets fans didn't know how physical he was. People just kind of maybe, you know, had him pegged as kind of more of an offensive defenseman, right? Which he obviously does have that offensive ability, but, you know, Pionk's a guy that can handle himself. Morrissey can handle himself. So I just think it's an oversimplification to say that, you know, the Jets' smaller defensemen are easy to play against. I would take a little bit of an issue with that. I think it's more so that, you know, the team defensively, you know, oftentimes just gives up too much time and space in the zone. Sure, does this, and you know, Dylan DeMello is another guy. Dylan DeMello is what, 6'1", 6'2", yeah. 6 feet? Like, it's not like we're talking about a 5'9" defenseman like Torrey Krug. I mean, DeMello can handle himself. He's a excellent defensive defenseman. His numbers back that up, right? So, I agree with you when you say Bruce Cassidy, though, it's surprising that he said that, because you don't see coaches say that, hear coaches say that a lot, Drew. You're right.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, and it's not, I don't think it's a size function. I mean, sure, you know, it's easier to be, you know, to be more physical when you're bigger, but the bigger Jets defenseman, I mean, look, Brendan Dillon is physical along the boards. Logan Stanley has been very hit or miss this season as it pertains to his physicality. But I don't think Brendan Dillon has been particularly imposing in front of the Jets net this year. And that was one of the strongest attributes that, the, you know, the reason why the Jets brought him in, make it more difficult for the opposition. And Dave has spoken about this many times, where, you know, is the alleged crackdown on cross-checking impacting Brendan Dillon and how he plays? And it certainly might be the case, Dave, but I think you need to see, look, and it's probably too little too late at this point in time, but if you're going to run back with the same defense next year, you're going to need to see a better commitment to physicality in front of your own, in front of your own goalie and in the high danger area.
Yeah, there's no question. There's too many times when you're watching this team, and first of all, they've got they're letting the guys gain position on them. They're not in the spot they need to be in, and as a result, they're at a disadvantage. And I think it's not just necessarily on the defense. It's a collective team mentality that we see too often, you know, guys trying to fly the zone and get a, you know, create a scoring opportunity while you're supposed to be defending, right? And I just think that the Jets, you know, like, even it's funny, even simplistic plays, oftentimes the Jets just make questionable decisions where they can maintain possession. And rather than doing so, they just dump the puck, lose possession, and then, so I look, there's a lot of this, like, and maybe that's a function of coaching. Maybe that's what they've been taught to do, but it just, you know, you're just giving up an opportunity, especially like I remember a couple times late in tie games where they would, you know, they would give up possession in the neutral zone without a significant amount of pressure. So there, I think there's a lot of things that this Jets team could do better. And I think that's a function of coaching. I think that there is an expectation that the coaching staff has to make improvements. There's no doubt about that. And yeah, I mean, look, collective team defense and what these guys need to do. I mean, we talk about systems all the time, right? But like, and I don't want to turn this into a Manuk Moose minute, but like, look at the Moose and look at the way, well, look, I mean, honestly, I mean, you've got young defensemen and they're all Jets prospects, right? They're all playing the same system. So everybody thinks, but the Jets systems aren't identical. The Moose systems aren't identical to the Jets. That's why whenever, when the Jets, Moose PK, for example, was like top three in the AHL, and the Jets PK was, you know, bottom three in the NHL, it was like, but they're playing the same system. I'm like, no, they're actually not. The Jets were a lot more static and passive, and the Moose were a lot more aggressive, and it's in different positions. So it's not identical. And, you know, I think that's a function of the coaching, and because the players had the ability. So, and obviously we know the PK has rebounded from what it was, which was disastrous in the first bit of the season, to actually a decent PK overall for the last little bit. But I'm just saying, so it's not identical, but the Moose are able to do it. So you have guys within the system, within this framework, who can get this stuff done. And I understand that the AHL is not the NHL, and I understand it's the next level, right? That's the next level of your development, of player development. But, you know, these, it's not that it's, they're not capable of doing it. They have to buy into it. And we just, you're not a good enough team. I mean, I look, this team has lived by the, you know, the expression, live by the sword, die by the sword. They've lived by Hellebuck and died by Hellebuck. Yeah. But when Hellebuck's, we talked about it, as he mentioned this 2 weeks ago, Hellebuck's advanced stats, his goals saved above expected, were still in the top 10 of the NHL. I don't know what they are right now, but 2 weeks ago, I think they were still, I think he was like eighth overall, which is pretty impressive given the fact that, you know, the team hadn't been playing well. And we talked about it. The team hasn't been scoring enough, aside from...
Well, and also that Hellebuck's been letting in 3+ goals a game.
No, especially since... Yeah, that's what I mean. So since that, since... I mean, maybe it was 3 weeks ago. Time, I can't even remember it. But the point is, you know, the Jets... And the Jets, until Tuesday nights in March, when the Jets have scored a combined, what, 22 goals in three games, they hadn't been scoring a lot of goals. So they aren't providing the run support. They're not providing the defense. That's why I've said, like, you can... The only thing that can be satisfying is that this is a collective team thing. It's not just one area... That's a problem for this Jets club. It's multiple areas. So there's a lot to work on in the offseason, a lot of things that they have to figure out and get better at if they want to be a contending team in 22-23.
No question about it. And it'll certainly, as we've documented, well documented, it's going to be a fascinating offseason for this Winnipeg Jets team, for both on the ice and in terms of the off-ice management and coaching staff and everything that plays into that. Still going to be a fascinating 48 hours with the NHL trade deadline coming up on Monday. When we come back, Frank Saravelli of Daily Faceoff with his latest news, scuttlebutt, rumors, everything around the NHL as it pertains to the trade deadline. One of the preeminent hockey insiders up next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Don't go anywhere. Tell your friends, tell your family. You're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning, like we do it each and every Saturday morning and have done so for many, many years. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you, talking about the Winnipeg Jets, talking about the NHL trade deadline. And the best player person to bring in to talk about the NHL trade deadline is one of hockey's preeminent insiders from dailyfaceoff.com. Good friend of ours, Frank Saravelli. Frank, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
What's going on? Good to be back with you guys.
It's great that you're able to make time for us. Undoubtedly a very busy time of the year as the trade deadline is rapidly approaching. Things got underway earlier this week, and I assume things will continue to pick up as the weekend goes. You know, what's your sort of sense of things right now, Frank? Is, you know, the early leaders are already out. They've already made their moves. And are things sort of quieting down as everyone sort of lets the ground, stabilize underneath them before it picks up again, you know, Sunday, Monday?
Yeah, I don't know that it's necessarily quieting down. I think conversations have continued on. I think a lot of teams that are interested in making moves haven't been happy with the prices, and they're sort of waiting and hoping that they come down. But the thing is, they have to keep an eye on the market and what's happening, because, you know, whenever you think that, you know, let's say you're a team that was interested in Ben Chiarot earlier this week, and you're saying, look, I'm not paying a first round pick for Ben Chiarot. It only takes one. So someone steps up and that player is off the market, and suddenly you're checking down to number two or three on your list, and it becomes a little bit of a different story. So I think teams are actively keeping an eye and conversation on what's happening in terms of, you know, every team, whenever they get something, they're coming back to you and saying, hey, I'm going to, you know, I've got this on the table. Can you beat it or can you match it? And when that happens, teams are always, it's this game of chicken that happens at the deadline where you're saying, does he really have that? It's the game of poker that always occurs. And I think you never really know until you get to 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock on Monday afternoon when you start to see things change a little bit, because all of a sudden that team comes back to you and they say, well, we'll actually take what you had on the table.
From your perspective, Frank, is it beneficial to be the early bird who makes the move? Or do you think that you're better off usually waiting to see how the landscape shifts around you and maybe make that move at the noon hour, the 1 o'clock hour, the 2 o'clock hour, you know, on trade deadline day?
There's a lot of factors to be considered with that. Me personally, I think it's always beneficial to be out in front of it and get the player that you target and make it be a curated selection, as opposed to, you know what, we'll just take any left shot D that's available at our price point come Monday afternoon at 2:30. Like, I don't think that helps your team. I think, you know, that puts you in a spot potentially where you're saying, well, we're rolling the dice here. We think this guy is a plug and play to whatever the other guy is that's on the market. And that's why I'm really impressed with some of the moves that Calgary has made over the last really 5 weeks now, going back to Valentine's Day. Tyler Toffoli, I've called it a curated selection. It's artisanal. It's, you think back to even just his arrival. He played for Daryl Sutter. Milan Lucic picks him up at the airport. He previously played with Sean Monahan. You step into a familiar environment, and there's a reason why you come in and score 8 goals in 14 games. You feel comfortable. You know exactly the player and person that you're getting. The same exists with Cali Yarncroke. His cousin is Elias Lindholm. He used to have sleepovers at Jacob Markstrom's house growing up in Gävle, Sweden. These are curated selections. The price we may consider to be high, but I think if you're going to take the bat off your shoulder and swing, you might as well go after a guy that you know is going to fit rather than a question mark, especially if you're giving up, in the end, relatively similar assets.
With all these curated selections, I could go for a charcuterie board, but I'll probably wait till the interview's over. And until
a little
I go
early into... for a charcuterie board.
It's never too early for smoked meats.
Yeah, that part is 100% true.
So Frank, there's so many players that we can ask you about. Obviously, we'll you know, tie in the Jets with Andrew Kopp and Paul Stastny. I'm sure, you know, one of us is going to ask you about Claude Giroux. But to me, maybe, you know, you agree with what I'm kind of thinking, but the defenseman to me is one of the most fascinating parts of this trade deadline a couple days away. Like, you've got Mark Giordano out there, you've got Hampus Lindholm out there, you've got Jacob Chychrun. What's kind of your assessment of the D market? You hear that the Leafs, you know, they're in on Mark Giordano. I know you've been reporting for Daily Faceoff, and you reported that Calgary might be interested in Hampus Lindholm, which I obviously didn't see coming. But who are the front runners for those three defensemen, would you say, right now?
Well, it's a little harder to say on the Hampus Lindholm front. I actually had not heard Calgary's name out there, so that wasn't me. I did not connect them to Lindholm.
Oh, sorry, Frank.
Yeah, no problem at all. There's been lots of stuff flying around, so sometimes it's hard, even in my own mind, to keep straight. I was sitting here saying, did I say that? I don't know that that's the case. But for Lindholm, I think the number of teams that have at least checked in it's varied because the price is so high. You know, it's one thing to make a call. It's another thing to say, yes, I'm interested at that price point. It's a first round pick. It's a grade A top prospect, plus another piece likely to make the money work. That's a stiff ask for a rental. And I think a number of teams have looked at that and they said, okay, so if that's the cost for Hampus Lindholm, what's then the cost? Do we need to only spend a tad more to get Jacob Chychrun from Arizona, a guy that we at least know we'll have for 3 more seasons at a very reasonable cap hit? Now, in talking to front office members around the league, you know, even as recently as last night, one of the comments I got back was, yeah, but Hampus Lindholm is way better than Jacob Chychrun. And I said, well, that may be true, but if you're going to even re-sign Hampus Lindholm, let's ballpark it at $7 million. Is Hampus Lindholm $2.5 million better than Jacob Chychrun? That's really how we have to evaluate things now moving forward, is that's why there's so much value in Brandon Hagel. It's yes, the player, but it's also the contract. 2 more years at 1.5, that was making teams that have significant cap troubles drool. And now, you know, you look at the rest of the defense market, it's Lindholm, it's Giordano, and then there's kind of sort of everyone else. It's Calvin DeHaan, it's Nick Leddy, it's, you know, go down the list. The left shot guys are in abundance, the right side guys never really so much, which is why you might end up seeing more for a right shot guy that's on the market, even though he may not even be as good as the left shot guy.
Frank Saravelli, our guest Saturday morning. We're talking about the NHL trade deadline. You know Frank from his exquisite work that he does with dailyfaceoff.com.
Exquisite, and you're gonna have a live... artisanal, curated. I love this.
And I was going to say, you have a live broadcast, dailyfaceoff.com. Going to have a live broadcast on Monday with all the trade deadline news and information. Why don't you give that a plug, Frank?
I feel like I'm at a wine tasting.
I might have a bottle around here somewhere. Frank. We got to drink something else.
Actually, Seagram's is our sponsor, Frank, so if you want, we'll give you some Seagram's. That'll be a better thing.
Perfect. I'm in on Seagram's. You know, I will probably, speaking of wine, I will probably need a gallon of it on Monday night, probably around 7:30 Eastern. I think that's my last hit. But in all seriousness, we have 3.5 hours of commercial free coverage on Monday, 12 noon Eastern to 3:30. We're streaming live on dailyfaceoff.com as well as YouTube and Twitter. I appreciate you guys allowing me to plug that. Come on over and watch us. We'll have breaking news, our whole team of analysts. We're going to have lots of stuff for you throughout the day, Monday, 12 to 3:30. So commercial free, streamed, you know, make it your second screen viewing, make it your primary screen viewing, whatever you want to do, subscribe on YouTube as well.
There you go. You need to, you know, you need that boss button. So if people are watching from work and the boss comes around, it, you know, used to be with March Madness, immediately flipped to some sort of random Excel spreadsheet.
That's the best part about being digital is like, right. You can just throw us up in a tab on on your browser and you quick tab over. That's all you need.
That's right. Just hide it there.
Yeah. Frank, Winnipeg based show, which means we have Winnipeg based questions. And right now the big focus is Andrew Kopp and Paul Stastny. Paul Stastny's a guy who's not really getting mentioned. 17 goals at 36 years of age. And so they're obviously, they're both UFAs. It doesn't sound like they're in Winnipeg's plans for next season. That's at least the sounds of it. So what are you hearing? What's the sense? And what kind of is the return that you might be getting a sense of that they could get for those two players?
Yeah, the return is hard to say. And I was kind of analyzing the numbers and taking a step back and looking at the market, I'm really surprised there hasn't been more talk about Paul Stastny. Like, I don't think enough people have appreciated the season he's had at his age. You know, if you look at his goal total, and I know you mentioned it, but you go back, it's his best production season since 2014. Like, this guy has been really good on a team that has struggled. And I think you take a look at that plus, you know, 100 playoff games that he's played in his career, a couple deep runs to the conference final. He has the experience. You know, I don't know that he's especially dying to be traded. In fact, I would think the ultimate preference is to stay. But at the moment, I haven't heard a lot of talk about Paul Stastny, and I'm wondering why that is, or perhaps we should be hearing more of it because he's played so well, and he also doesn't have any no trade protection. Kopp, there's certainly been more interest. When it comes to Kopp, I think there's sort of been this interesting little side market that's developed where I don't even know if you can call it a side market because these guys could end up being really an integral parts of a playoff run. But when you look at some of the guys that are in that mix as a Swiss Army knife type player for your team, you think of the versatility that Kopp brings. He's sort of in that same ballpark as, you know, you see the Hagel trade that went down on Friday. He's in the same sort of ballpark as Arturi Lehkonen, really smart player. You know, there's some other guys that are in that group. Nick Paul's in that category. You know, a few names that have popped up that have sort of, they're all the teams are kind of circling around that same group of players that have made them pretty valuable. I would think Andrew Kopp is in the second round pick range. You know, perhaps the Jets could get something else that might help them. And then the other name that's popped up, not a rental, is Brendan Dillon. You know, it certainly seems like with the Jets, you know, I think everyone has been, and I think it includes their front office and management staff. Everyone's sort of been waiting for this moment to come all season long where you're like, oh, that's it. The Jets got it. They're going to put it together and go. The problem is anytime it's looked like that's going to happen, it's been a false start. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're at this point now, 48 hours, 50 hours to go until the deadline, where they don't have any other choice at this point. Time's up. You're on pace for, I don't know, what is it, 87 points. You got to make a move. You got to shake things up a bit. You got to get pieces back. And that's the unfortunate reality for where the Jets are at. With Dylan, I think teams have looked and they said, well, wait a second, Ben Chiarot, just to finish off this point, because I started rambling about the Jets season, to finish off this point on Dylan is they've looked at him and they say, Ben Chiarot got that as a rental. Brendan Dylan is the same player, same age, and he has term. Mm-hmm. Is he a more attractive piece? The hard part for the Jets is, do you like Dylan? Do you want to keep him? Is he more valuable to another team with the term? The Jets' problem, as we all know, is, well, it's twofold. One, it's hard to get players to plug into your top four in free agency. The Jets have basically always had to do it by trade or draft. And the other part is they've got some young guys coming that they also need room for at a certain point. So you'd love to see some of those young guys step up on a more consistent basis and grab it, but there also really hasn't been a hole for them to do so either.
Certainly, that's something we've talked about many times over on our program, as you know, where that next wave of defensemen that seem to be ready, where do they get that chance with the logjam of defensemen at the NHL level? Brendan Dylan being in play would certainly free that up for the Winnipeg Jets. You know, Frank, the other big name in discussion, and your friend and our friend Anthony Sanfilippo of crossingbroad.com reported this, that Giroux wasn't going to travel with the Flyers. He wasn't going to play this weekend with the Flyers after he got to that 1,000th game in a Philadelphia uniform. Sort of, what's the latest on Giroux? Is it, you know, who's sort of stepping up to the plate? Is one team really making a push to get that done, you know, compared to some others? And, you know, is there, I guess, truth to the idea that Giroux doesn't have any interest in going? I believe it was to Boston. He had no interest in going there, if I'm not mistaken.
It's really a two-horse race, guys. It comes down to the Colorado Avalanche and the Florida Panthers. And here's the sticky point for the Flyers. I believe Claude Giroux's ultimate preference is to go to the Florida Panthers. I think he's told the Flyers, well, I'd consider Colorado as the other team. To this point, the Panthers also know that. And they're first off, they don't have a first-round pick, I should say, in either 22 or 23. So not this year or next year. And if you're the Flyers, you're going, well, 2024, like, that doesn't really interest me. Like Chuck Fletcher may not even be in the job by then. And it's even less likely for him to be here when that first round pick finally becomes an impact player in the Flyers lineup. So that's part of it, is that the Panthers know it and they're not really, I think they've made a little bit of progress, but they're not really, you know, offering a ton to where the Flyers are saying, we're thrilled with this. Let's do it. Basically is my understanding of the situation. Now, on the other side of that, the Colorado Avalanche, I believe, have put a better offer on the table, at least in the Flyers' eyes. They have a 2023 first-round pick. And is it enough to get, like, how do they go about convincing Claude Giroux that this is the better fit? How can you do that? They've been in conversation with Pat Brisson, his agent. They've had free rein to negotiate and talk to other teams. And it's a tough spot for the Flyers to be in, because you're trading your franchise icon, but you need to come back to your fan base and say, well, we got something really significant for him. And I think the Flyers are in a position now where they feel like that's not possible with Florida, but they have a player that needs to sign off on the trade that maybe is a little hesitant to go to the other place. And there's 50 hours to go and they're between a rock and a hard place.
You know, Frank, just sticking with Claude Giroux, just wanted to mention how awesome that was that they had his dad calling the lineup for his 1,000th NHL game. I just thought that was so classy and fun to watch. I wanted to ask you about the Vegas Golden Knights, and not as it pertains necessarily to the trade deadline, because I'm not sure how active they're going to be. But I mean, how big of a disappointment is where they're at in the standings? Because obviously the Jets just hammered them at home on Tuesday night, and they've got Vegas back here in Winnipeg on Tuesday night. The Golden Knights, as you know, 1 point ahead of the Stars, but the Stars have 4 games in hand. So it looks like the Stars are in the driver's seat for that second wild card spot in the West. Like, just considering what they gave up for Jack Eichel and, you know, how much they have invested in, you know, players like Alex Pietrangelo, Max Pacioretty. Like, I mean, we can't talk about the Golden Knights and obviously not talk about all the guys that are out of the lineup. But I mean, this Golden Knights team was a Stanley Cup contender at the beginning of this season. And now it looks like, you know, it's going to be tough for them to even make the playoffs.
Yeah, they're in a really tough spot. $40+ million on the shelf. I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of talent that's sitting out. And it's a lot of talent at key positions. You know, you look at it and the goaltending is really what stands out of late. And it almost feels like karma in a way, doesn't it? Like, you trade the reigning Vezina Trophy winner and Marc-Andre Fleury for nothing. And you do it in a way that riles him up and your fan base. You shoulder your team's Stanley Cup expectations on Robin Lehner, who certainly is a capable goalie, but his body has failed him at this point. And it's not just the shoulder injury, it's the knee injury. And you say, well, we're now left with Lauren Brossoit, who you guys know well, who has not played, I would say the best way to explain it is not exactly bathed himself in glory in Vegas. And then you've got Thompson, and that's a lot to ask of two guys that are not number ones in the league to say, hey, we're trying to win a Stanley Cup this year. On top of all the other injuries that they have, you know, Pacioretty, Smith, you know, go down the list. Now Eichel's hurt and the Golden Knights are concerned. Like, the wheels are falling off. And I wonder if you're sitting in that seat in management as Kelly McCrimmon is, do you just throw your hands up in the air and you say, look, this season is a banana sandwich. Like, there's no chance we can cover up or paper over these health issues by making moves at the deadline. I'd have to think that's the position they're in. I would say the goaltending, though, is a big question mark, because it's the injuries and it's to close out this season that would seemingly lend you a window to go out and trade for someone in the hopes that you're not that far out of the playoff picture. If you can get some of these guys back, we've still got a 5-week window here where you can make hay and sneak in. And then you could potentially be a really dangerous team if you could get everyone healthy. But Mark Stone, like, what's up with his back? Like, there's been some talk that this is a really, really serious injury and he may not even be able to play in the playoffs. There is all sorts of question marks for the Vegas Golden Knights, and none of them are good.
I guess the question would be, is that an artisanal banana sandwich? But we'll deal with that later. Frank Saravelli of DailyFaceoff.com.
Nicely done there, Drew.
Thank you. Here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the upcoming NHL trade deadline, Monday afternoon, rapidly approaching, Dave M.
You know, Frank, we keep our focus here on the Winnipeg Jets generally, obviously the Manitoba Moose, but, you know, with the trade deadline, you have to broaden it and you have to look across the league. Which is a team that on Monday or as you said, maybe today or tomorrow, that you expect to make a splash that maybe folks aren't paying as close attention to? Not the Colorados, but Florida. Is there a team that you think could be active in advance of Mondays?
There's so many, to be honest. Like, I think there's a lot of wild cards. I think playoff teams and non-playoff teams. You know, I could see the St. Louis Blues. You know, they're in on a lot of different defensemen. I could see them also trying to trade for a forward. They're in a spot where their cap situation is so difficult, they're going to have to trade someone from their roster in order to make it work. I could see the Los Angeles Kings trying to go after a player with term. I think the New York Rangers are trying to do that. Two teams in similar spots on opposite coasts that have tons of cap space, prospects to trade, picks. They've got the whole, you know, gamut that makes teams envious at this point. And they're also really competitive playoff teams. I think it's going to be relatively quiet in Carolina and Pittsburgh. Washington is still kind of nibbling around the edges. They'd like to get a third line guy. They'd like to get a goalie. Tampa made their move. Julian Brisebois comes out, hands up, I'm done. Boston's interesting because they're still in this kind of window where they've also played sneaky well over the last few weeks. that they could be a real threat in the Atlantic that a lot of teams haven't been talking about in a division loaded with Florida and Tampa and Toronto. So Boston is going to be trying to add on their back end. I think they've been talking and eyeing up Lindholm. I think they've been in on Giordano. I think they've been in on Calvin DeHaan. Like they're looking at the whole list of left shot defensemen. We touched on St. Louis, not sure about Minnesota. They're kind of, you know, again, another team sort of like Washington poking around, trying to make their team better, but don't want to give up a ton to do it. Edmonton is going to get a left shot defenseman. I just don't know who. Nashville, wild card team. Dallas is looking to add on their back end. They created some cap flexibility with Sekera going on waivers. There's a lot of teams. I know I just ran through them all. There are a lot of teams.
That was awesome. That was great. You went through the entire league right there.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this one, Frank, and we'll let you go because, well, obviously it's a very busy time of the year. Goaltending, it's the big question mark in so many different markets, especially among playoff teams. Marc-Andre Fleury is the big name out there. Do you anticipate that he ends up getting moved before Monday? And if he doesn't, or even if he does, you know, is there another sort of goaltender that might come, that might be traded that could maybe help shore up a team, i.e. the Maple Leafs, you know, who are desperate in need of a goaltender?
Yeah, I would say that there are, it's better than a 50-50 shot, I think, that Marc-Andre Fleury moves. I think the big thing is the cost. Mm-hmm, the right. Blackhawks are asking for a first round pick. I don't think anyone's stepping up with their goaltending issues and saying, you know, we're willing to pay a first round pick. It's not the player. It's more just with their teams and where they're at. Edmonton's in that spot. Toronto's in that spot. I think Washington would pay the first, maybe, but I don't think that team's high on his list of preferred destinations. So, you know, there's a lot to it. And I would say the other goalies that are out there that could potentially move include Alexander Georgiev. I think there's a pretty good shot in New York. They're trying hard to move him. They'd also need to get a veteran backup that they could slide into his spot to back up Igor Shesterkin. The Columbus Blue Jackets are really trying hard to move Jonas Korpisalo as well. I think they're in mid to late round pick territory, fourth round, fifth round pick, to get back for Korpisalo. He's a guy that is not going to be coming back to Columbus. He's a pending UFA. They're a non-playoff team. Yeah, at this point, you take anything you can get, but it's a far cry from the second and potential third round pick that they were asking at the start of the season. He's had a couple down years. Does Korpisalo help your team? You know, Anton Forsberg is out there. That's the big question with these guys that teams have looked at and they said, well, we're the Oilers, for instance. Mikko Koskinen, he's actually played really well over the last month. Is what Korpisalo is going to come in and give you, is it any better than what Koskinen's giving you? Probably not. So that's the question teams have been asking. You know, Toronto's in the same boat. When we finally get Jack Campbell back and he's healthy, we could probably realistically expect the same thing or better from what we currently have.
It'll be a fascinating next 48 hours or so. Frank will have it covered in its entirety for dailyfaceoff.com. Frank, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks for making time for us this morning. And good luck for the next 48. And I hope it's a nice bottle of wine you crack open on Monday night at around 7:30, like you said.
No doubt about that. Cheers, guys. Have a good one. Enjoy the deadline.
Thanks a lot, Frank.
Thanks, Frank. You too. Frank. There he goes, Frank Saravelli, joining us this Saturday morning. What a great way to wrap up this program. The that absolute was awesome. Latest.
I mean, Frank knows the league better than anybody. And the amount of players. I think he
knows who the next expansion draft players are going to be. Remember, the expansion draft, he knew who Seattle was taking, you know, well, like minutes after the lists were released back in whatever month that was last year, or whenever the hell that was. Time flies. But Frank has certainly done he shows that you don't need to be on TV anymore. You know, he was one of the TSN hockey insiders, or the senior writer for TSN, and he's now branched out, and he's certainly not just carving his own niche, but he's leading the trail and as one of the best insiders, if not the best, with the Daily Faceoff crew.
Yeah, they do such a good job on dailyfaceoff.com. We have Mike McKenna on. They've added Scott Burnside. I mean, they have an impressive roster of writers and reporters. So yeah, I mean, they're a must follow. I mean, I'm on dailyfaceoff.com, you know, if not daily, multiple times per week. And, you know, we've been lucky to
as you saw weeklyfaceoff.com. He goes yeah, to the exactly. other side.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of set myself up for that one, but we're always lucky to have Frank on, and especially this time of year. I mean, I was kind of thinking to myself, this is, you know, there's not that many big names, but when you think about it, guys, I mean, there could always be a player that you're not expecting, kind of, you know, a la Paul Stastny 2018. But I mean, to me, if Colorado gets Claude Giroux, I mean, they're already the favorite to win the Stanley Cup. But if you throw in Giroux and he's on your third line, I mean, that's kind of ridiculous.
Well, and I think here, look, bringing it back local to here, Dave, you know, what Frank was saying there about Brendan Dillon, and I mean, you can connect the dots and it makes sense that, you know, Brendan Dillon might have some interest, you know, at the deadline, especially if the Jets look at their, you know, if they Jets think that one of their young defensemen are ready to step into the lineup, and, you know, you'd have to believe that they probably are. Because, you know, how much more seasoning do they necessarily need at the AHL if they're going to be an NHL regular eventually? You know, Dillon getting subtracted opens up a roster spot for a player, not for Nate Beaulieu, just for the record, but opens up a roster spot that one of those young defensemen can come fill for the Jets. So it's certainly a name that hasn't been bandied about as much as Andrew Kopp and Paul Stastny, but Brendan Dillon potentially being in play for the Jets would make Monday all the more fascinating and, you know, something worth watching.
No, there's no question. And I mean, the one thing that Kevin Cheveldayoff has, and we've talked about it, is he has the luxury of not worrying about his left side guys being subject to waivers next year. So Declan Chisholm, Dalen Sandberg, and Ville Heinola will all remain waiver exempt. Johnny Kovacevic and Leon Gavanke on the right side, not so much anymore. Those guys will both be required to pass through waivers. So my expectation realistically, and as you and I were talking about this during the break, was that, you know, a guy like Kovacevic will be your seventh defenseman, because, you know, provided the Jets don't make any moves with Schmidt, DeMello, or Pionk, then you have a guy like Johnny Kovacevic as your seventh. Maybe you hope that Leon can squeak through waivers, you know, and get through. He's had a bounce back season for the Moose this year. But the one thing is, the Jets, in theory, you know, don't really have to do anything in the sense that they don't have, their hands aren't tied. And we see the Jets generally make move decisions when their hands are, when their hand is forced. So right now you could say, you know what, like there is a logjam ahead of Sandberg and ahead of Heinola and ahead of Chisholm, but there's also the luxury of having the waiver exemption. So, I mean, the truth is that it's the right side guys who are no longer waiver exempt, but it seems like your right side is fairly stable. I mean, It you know, Nate Schmidt does bring a certain amount of offense. He brings a huge boost to a room that I think desperately needs what he does. The only issue for Nate Schmidt is, you know, do you really want to be paying a guy $6 million to be playing on your third pairing? That's the less than ideal part. So the Jets will have some question marks, of course, but, you know, the issue is from the left side where you have that logjam. You seem like Morrissey's not going anywhere. We talked about that. Brendan Dillon, in theory, could be with your team for a while unless you decide to make a move. And Logan Stanley is the guy who, you know, his spot isn't secure, but it seems to be fairly, like, you know, over a lot of the other guys, you know, so like in, over Heinola, over Sandberg. So, you know, look, the organization has to make a decision. I think that what, I mean, personally, what I would do, and I'm not the GM, but I think you let these guys, I don't think you actually trade away any of these assets now. I think that'd be a huge error. I think you go on a run as best you can with the Moose to go for a Calder Cup. You give these guys that experience. You watch them, because I think it was Mark Morrison who said this, the Moose head coach. He said, you know, return of the Mac. Because what he said was, you know, for one playoff series is like, or one or two playoff series is like a full season. The level of experience these guys get in high pressure situations. So, I mean, as an organization, to be able to evaluate how these guys perform in the playoffs is going to speak to what you want to do as an organization. So that's why I said you let these guys. I would think it'd be a mistake. I don't think you trade any of these guys to get a mid-level prospect back. You see what you have in the summer, you know, and then you evaluate, and then you can make trades accordingly.
David, ultimately comes down to you are not going to have the same group of defensemen in the organization next year. I'm not talking about just the Jets. I'm talking about Jets and Moose, because, I mean, in my opinion, you can't have Ville Heinola and Dillon Sandberg playing in the American Hockey League next year. I mean, you obviously could, Dave. But I think, you know,
who does that benefit, though, to your point?
Well, exactly. And Sam,
me, who's covering them?
Well, exactly. And how many games did Sandberg play? I forget. Was it four or five? Six. Something like that.
Six.
There you go. Half a dozen. Yeah. So he looked good. Sandberg's ready. I think you'd agree, Dave. He's ready. Heinola is ready. Can they help out the Moose this year, go on a nice long run to the Calder Cup final and hopefully win a Calder Cup? Obviously, yes. But we're talking about next year. And you have to make those decisions. If you're not making them before the trade deadline, you have to make them in the offseason. I agree with you, Drew. There's going to be, you know, a lot of potential moves, but that's the way. Again, I'm not advocating. I like Brendan Dillon a lot, but I mean, just do the numbers, right? Like Nate Beaulieu, I think we all agree, is not coming back, but he's not the problem. He's a 7 or 8 defenseman at best, right? It's moving somebody on that left side. Maybe you move somebody on the right side. I can see Johnny Kovacevic being kind of that 7th defenseman, kind of playing that, you know, Nate Beaulieu role next year. Dave's mentioned that before. So if you're not trading Brendan Dillon, I mean, you got to do something. So are you going to trade Logan Stanley? Or are you going to trade Dylan Sandberg? I have no idea. But I think there's just too many good young defensemen on that left side that, you know, it's just a numbers game and you're going to have to move somebody.
And I will say, sorry, just let me just quickly interject. The Jets did get fortunate. I mean, as much as you want to say COVID was a bad thing, but because of all the COVID-related pauses, they actually got to see these guys play NHL games, meaningful NHL games. So the one side benefit to this season was that guys, like, if it was, remember, I mean, those guys weren't injured. They were in COVID protocol. So you got to see Declan Chisholm play in the NHL. You got to see Johnny Kovacevic play in the NHL. You got to see Dylan Sandberg play in the NHL. Three things that may not have transpired if we didn't have this situation. So you do have the benefit of having been able to evaluate them on whether it's 6 games for Sandberg or 3 or 4 for Kovacevic or 1 or 2, I think it was 1 for Chisholm. So you did get the benefit of that, but like I said, I think those decisions are best made in the summer after the playoffs.
And I just wanted to quickly throw in, Drew, Sandberg was a 2017 draft pick as opposed to Heinola, who was 2019. So especially Sandberg, to me, like, I realize he's been injured this year and he's missed a bunch of games. And so, I mean, maybe the, you know, Chevy and the coaching staff, the management group see, you know, Sandberg playing another year in the AHL, but I don't see both Sandberg and Heinola spending a full-time year in the AHL. It's a first and second round pick. Like, what are you doing at 23 years old? I mean, at a certain point you have to say, okay, we're going with Sandberg this year in our top six.
It will be an absolutely fascinating next little while for the Winnipeg Jets. They play tomorrow night in Chicago, so we'll have a post-game show right around 8:45 p.m. Central Time. Will we have trades to talk about? Well, we very well might. We'll find out tomorrow. And, of course, all the latest news about the Winnipeg Jets will be on illegalcurve.com as well as the Manitoba Moose. Big thank you to all the sponsors of this program. They make it a possibility. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zapier Group Realty, Betway, Bernstein's Deli, Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, and Grid Park support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey. Moose coverage later on tonight. You'll be on illegalcurve.com. You can also follow along on Dave's Twitter feed at ICDave in case you missed any of the program.
I'll be watching this game tonight with an artisanal sandwich.
There you go. Artisanal everything. It's been an artisanal broadcast. Having some artisanal spring water, I think, afterwards you're going to have to wash down those Junior McChickens. No,
I'm a tap water guy.
You're a tap water guy.
Tap water and ice is good enough for me.
Got low maintenance.
Nice, clean Manitoba water coming from Shoal Lake.
There you go. Delicious. There you go. That's nice, Ezzy. I'm glad
you were able to chime in with that.
It still comes from Shoal Lake,
yes. And isn't Shoal Lake in Ontario?
It is in Ontario as well. But aside from that, that's okay. We nailed every other part of that conversation in its entirety.
Water comes from Ontario? Really?
Big thank you to Scott Billick and Frank Saravelli for joining us on the program. In case you missed any of it, the immediate replay will be on Instagram right after we hit end broadcast. The podcast will also be available just as soon as Dave M. does all of his great work.
Instagram.
Sorry, YouTube. Yes, not Instagram, YouTube. But you might as well follow us on Instagram, follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, smash the like button, subscribe to us on YouTube, and of course the podcast. Leave us some feedback. Always appreciate hearing from all of you and seeing all of you in the chat. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, Follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.